Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
This research demonstrated was that the onus is on the in-house lawyer to set the tone where the expectation is early and systematic ADR use.
For this 50th episode of International Dispute Negotiation, we decided to take a look at dispute resolution through a looking glass, at least from an in-house counsel's point of view. Alexander Odie is a partner at the London offices of the law firm Herbert Smith, and he led a study of corporate use of alternative dispute resolution. The name of the study is The Inside Track, How Corporates Are Using ADR. The study won Herbert Smith an honorable mention in last year's CPR Awards for Law Firm Excellence in ADR. The study took a look at how some 21 companies, mainly in the UK, approach dispute resolution and in particular how they make use of mediation. The study's authors sifted through the data that they had retrieved and concluded that there are roughly four different types of approaches to alternative dispute resolution used by companies, what they call the non-users, the negotiators, ad hocs, and embedded users. In this episode of IDN, Alex explains not just what makes one type of user different from another, but how their differences can have an impact on other parts of company operations, relationships with outside counsel, and how these four categories may also be seen as stages by which companies naturally progress towards more efficient forms of dispute resolution.
In a sense, we've come to see that those stages really represent evolutionary stages in the development of an organization's use of ADR.
The corporate counsel is the fish, and then the one that begins to form its land legs, and then the one that's sort of simian-looking, and the corporate counsel who finally walks upright has a systemic approach to dispute resolution.
I hadn't matched the images to the labels, but I think it's fair to say that we'd viewed this in terms of an organization starting life right. As a non-user, involving or developing to become a negotiator, and I'll come on to explain the characteristics right. of a negotiator, developing further to become an ad hoc user of ADR, and ultimately an embedded user where they have a systematic approach to ADR, which is embedded within the dispute resolution culture.
I think that's a great analogy, because it is one of those where it's a progressive line that as people try something. I mean, you can see, like, I'm doing no mediations. I'm not even going to try. Then, for whatever reason, one day you try one. You see how it can be successful. Then you become open to it, and you move up. And once you're there, it's very difficult for people to go back, because now they've found a tool that's more efficient and allows them to maybe obtain their commercial goals shorter, quicker, not spend as much money. And then they go, you know, up to the more systemic user again, beginning to also track at this point the benefits, the financial savings. You know, it's once you go up this scale, it's hard for you to backslide, I would think.
It is. It actually makes sense from our perspective to start at the top, in a sense, because to start with embedded users and indicate what one aspires to. So what were the key features of an embedded user? Well, ADR played a central role in those organizations' dispute resolution culture. They tended to use either an early case assessment system or less formal internal guidelines to embed ADR use within their in-house legal department. They used ADR processes more frequently and at an earlier stage in the dispute cycle than other categories of user. They reported the highest ADR skill levels amongst their in-house lawyers, importantly, they enjoyed the most constructive relationships with their external dispute resolution lawyers, where embedded users reported real benefits as against some of the other categories of users.
Let's take just one of those, which is the early case assessment or an ECA.
Yeah.
The embedded users, I mean, to explain very quickly, some people may not know what an ECA is.
Okay, an early case assessment system is a formal or semi-formal project management tool that requires disputes to just requires an early investigation of the facts, bringing in appropriate expertise, usually within a prescribed timescale, and then an early evaluation of an appropriate dispute resolution strategy using an ADR method if appropriate, or a more formal dispute resolution process if that's required, and take an informed strategic approach, not to allow a dispute to escalate and meander over time with costs being incurred and the business not getting a not getting a proper understanding of the risks of it proceeding in that way.
You know, it's interesting that this is a characteristics of the embedded users, because you know we do ECAs, and when you do them, the business people come to expect them because that's all they really want to know. They want to know, you know, what's the likely outcome going to be if we don't settle this case. So then they say, well, if that's the outcome and that's what we're going to spend, can I beat that result today through a negotiated outcome?
And one of the important features of looking at the way in which embedded users behaved was some used ECA systems, but there was another community of embedded users that didn't feel they needed the formality of an early case assessment system. They had achieved within their in-house legal department a culture of ADR use, which meant that they were always thinking about settlement opportunities in a systematic way. They were regularly revisiting whether a dispute was susceptible to resolution through mediation or another process. So they had very much the same mindset as the ECA users, but culturally they didn't feel they needed to go down the formality which an ECA can embody. It doesn't have to, but it can embody. And we perceived a slight difference in approach between organisations that are US headquartered, who might be slightly more willing to embrace an ECA system, and organisations which are UK or EMEA based, where there was a slightly less appetite for ECA systems. And our take on it was the difference may possibly be explained by the extent to which an organisation is exposed to a big docket of US domestic litigation. If you have that on your books to deal with, the burdens are so oppressive that the discipline and formality that an ECA process brings seems to us to justify the effort you've got to go through. But the key defining features of the embedded users were an appetite for early mediation or ADR use, significantly earlier in the dispute cycle. And that was because the embedded users really didn't see any downside in a mediation that took place early and failed. The upside was obvious because there was such a huge benefit in terms of the saving in costs and management time. But even a failed early mediation was a massive learning experience.
Right, because you're going to do that work anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And by the way, the argument against that, which I hear occasionally from external counsel, is let's first do a little bit of disclosure. Let's first go through a round of submissions in an arbitration. Let's first do something and learn more about the case. I hope that we're an embedded user, but I mean that would be something we would be inspired to be. Our response would be, well, what's the downside to doing something now? Wouldn't one of the goals be to avoid having to do the things that you are suggesting that we should just do?
Exactly. And even if the mediation doesn't work early on in the piece, one knows that they always represent effective learning opportunities and opportunities to gather information often in advance of the time at which it will be made available in the discovery or the disclosure process.
There's also a negotiation aspect of this, which is cases, it's easier to settle a case in its early stages. It is more difficult to settle in its later stages as positions become more solidified.
Exactly, exactly so. And the early mediation use just encourages engagement from the decision makers, and it encourages realistic appraisal of the case, so that the wheat can be sorted from the chaff. And one knows that happens in the mediation process, but the earlier it takes place, the sooner there is a focus on the real issues and the risks that go with them if a settlement isn't reached. The next category were organisations we described as ad hoc users. Now, they had positive views of ADR. They understood all of its benefits and were quite enthusiastic about the process, but they considered that a systematic approach was either unworkable or unnecessary for their organisation. Unworkable because they simply had so many disputes or were such a large and diverse organisation that they couldn't put a system in place that worked for everybody, or unnecessary because their docket just didn't include enough material disputes to merit the extra effort that went with being an embedded user. And I think the ad hoc users also, as a key identifier, had strong views on retaining flexibility at point of dispute. So they perceived that even saying as a legal department, we have a systematic approach to using mediation early whenever we can, somehow represented a fettering of their choice of dispute resolution process at point of dispute. And what they wanted to do was have absolute flexibility to say, with each one of our cases, we're going to take a look at it, we're going to assess the merits and the law and decide whether an ADR process is appropriate or go down another route on a more formal process.
I'm skeptical of people who say those things, because those are the people, I meet a lot of these ad hoc users, as you've labeled them, and they're the people who will tell you, they sit across the table, they say that they want to be open-minded, and they've heard about mediation, they like the idea, but they'll tell you, not for this dispute. And there's always a reason that you come out with, well, why you're not going to use mediation for this dispute.
That may very well be right. I mean, one of the interesting features when we were trying to analyze what the experiences of the ad hoc users were, they reported two interesting features. One, that an unsuccessful mediation could have a negative effect on the organization's corporate view of ADR.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So if they had a mediation that went badly, or they felt an opponent had abused the process in some way, that tended to have a collective negative effect on their appetite to use ADR. But the ad hoc users were all, and every single one of them, reported a concern as to whether their external dispute resolution lawyers were using and recommending ADR as early in the cycle as they could do. The fear, obviously, was that the external lawyers were running the cases on in the interests of fee income, not taking the earliest opportunity to settle the case. And every single one of the ad hoc users reported that they wished they had... there were cases that they'd looked back and thought, we wish we'd pushed the external lawyers harder to try mediation earlier.
Very interesting.
So, in a sense, that was one of the starkest illustrations of an advantage by having a systematic approach to ADR use within the in-house.
Big contrast between the two. I mean, these guys, the embedded users who say, let's try the mediation, and if it doesn't succeed, at least we will know better why we disagree. You know, it's hard for me to find reasons to justify the approach of, well, you know, as I hear it all the time, it's just not the right time for mediation.
The ad hoc users tended to have a sort of latent dissatisfaction, a feeling that we should have tried the mediation, you know, months earlier than in fact we did, and of course we would have saved whatever costs would have been incurred over the relevant period. So it was just the feeling that they really should have driven this earlier.
So what you're finding really interesting is that there's also a level of assertiveness that goes along as you go up your sort of your evolutionary chain, and as you get towards the embedded users or the more sophisticated systemic users of mediation, you're finding that the clients, the parties here, are being more assertive in
Absolutely.
The process.
And they do that in practical ways, because what the embedded users were doing was making clear in their panel appointment processes or insisting on their terms of engagement with their outside law firms that those law firms were aligned with the embedded user clients' expectations in terms of ADR use. Okay, so if we move on to the third category that we identified, and we call
it,
them...
It's shocking that there are actually two categories below this.
Well, we certainly found this. I think the point about negotiators is that they aren't necessarily below ad hoc users, but they have... They certainly reported a slightly different approach. They also were positive about alternative dispute resolution. They also used it in an ad hoc way. But they had a very strong cultural preference within their organisations for direct negotiations to resolve disputes. And they saw less inherent value in mediation as a process over direct negotiation.
Because they're going to do it themselves. They want
exactly. And typically, these were organisations that were highly skilled deal makers and negotiators.
Right.
So what they tended to view mediation as a somewhat more formal process, which was really only invoked once direct negotiation with a counterparty had failed.
Right. Which, by the way, we see a lot of these types of parties. When we propose mediation, we get into a dispute and we want to settle it, we're stuck, it seems intractable and you want to move on, we propose mediation. What we find is that there are a number of companies that will not know enough about mediation to try it, but they will jump at the chance to have a more senior level of negotiations to try to settle. That the proposal to mediation will get you to.
Yes.
You won't get mediation, but you may get a settlement.
Exactly. And I don't think it's fair to say that you know, it isn't a case of people missing a trick. It's really a case of an organisation that just simply has a different expectation of the way in which it wants to resolve the dispute. That said, when some of the negotiators did get to the mediation process, they reported some frustrations in it. They found it very difficult to deal with, for example, some of the waiting that one knows has to go on over a mediation day or days. One of the lessons that I took out of that was that when you are acting for a negotiator client, you've got to do as much work as you can up front prior to the mediation to ensure that the exploration the exploration of interests, if you like, is done early, so you can talk turkey as soon as the decision makers are engaged in the process, that they haven't got to hang about for hours and hours until the business end of the negotiation.
I always tell people to bring a book.
A book, all of the newspapers, and we make sure we know where we can send the trainees out to go and buy coffees and so forth. So, the last category then, very quickly, were the non-users. Two of the 21 organisations that we surveyed were non-users, and they reported no ADR use at all.
Which, by the way, I would bet if you were really able to do the top 500 or 1,000 companies around the planet, I bet that would be the biggest category, the non-users. In a lot of places in the world, they just don't know mediation.
Frankly, we were surprised to encounter any non-users, given that we were talking principally to lawyers who were based in the UK, which where the process is well known and quite developed. But these two non-users reported that they were non-users for completely different reasons, which was interesting. In one case, it reflected a company policy prohibiting ADR use. Okay, that had arisen following a bad historic experience of domestic arbitration in the US, and essentially through kind of Chinese whispers and perhaps misunderstanding of the differences between the processes, it had extended to an informal prohibition on any kind of ADR use. And that was remarkable because the organisation was one which had valued long-term trading relationships, was extremely litigation averse, yet nevertheless wasn't using ADR tools really at all. Happily, since we undertook this research, that organisation has trained its legal department, revised its views, and is now actually an enthusiastic mediation user. So it's an illustration of how things can change. The other non-user was actually, in some respects, slightly more troubling in that they understood all of the benefits of ADR, but they had a portfolio of commercial disputes proceeding in the English courts, which is a strongly pro-ADR forum. Yet they simply weren't using mediation in any of them, and they weren't having a dialogue with their external lawyers about using mediation in any of them. So that was puzzling, and the sceptical non-user, that's the first organisation that I was describing, reported the single least favourable experience of external lawyers, because when the in-house counsel in that non-user had actually said, well, shouldn't we be trying mediation? They had received active resistance to the idea from their external lawyers who were conducting the litigation at the time.
Really? How did they explain that? How did they explain even continuing with an external counsel that didn't do what they wanted?
The short answer is
I generally asked that question.
It wasn't really within the scope of.
Well, why did you put up with that sort of?
I believe that in the end, they did work with that law firm and did use mediation, and so they found a way through that impasse. But at least the initial response had been pushback from the external counsel.
I know that when your survey results came out earlier this year. The reaction in the in-house legal community was and this has been reported to me. Michael Leitz, who's the executive director of the International Mediation Institute, and very involved in promoting broader acceptance of mediation. He and I both noted that people were asking themselves, where do I fall in these four categories? It really raised a level of awareness,
which is nice to me. If we manage to do that, then that's fantastic. Yeah. Because the objective was, you know, we had access to some very enlightened in-house counsel. We'd captured a huge amount in terms of their experiences and the thoughts of what was effective and what wasn't. The objective of doing the survey was to be able to share that so other organisations can benchmark themselves against the 21 organisations that participated in this survey, can ask themselves, as you say, where do I fit in this categorisation? And then obviously what we wanted to do was help organisations that were going through that process understand what they needed to do to make practical changes to their own business to move up the evolutionary scale if they felt it was warranted. And so what we produced in parallel with the research study was something that we called our ADR toolkit. It's a series of questions that in-house counsel can ask themselves about their business.
And that's, by the way, that's publicly available on your website.
Absolutely. Anybody, yes, yeah, it is. You go to www.herbertsmith.com, go to services, dispute resolution, mediation and other forms of ADR, and there's a link to both the research and to the ADR toolkit. Anyone can just contact me and I'll send them a copy. That's no problem at all. The point, of course, is that we couldn't tell an organisation what they had to do to change their business, right, because in-house counsel have to work that out for themselves. And part of the intellectual rigour and the value in this process is about in-house counsel saying that I want to get a greater grip on my portfolio of disputes and manage them even more effectively than I am doing currently.
And so, let me see the techniques that other people are adopting.
Exactly.
What are the other approaches of the others? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I think the point about the ADR toolkit is we were very conscious that this shouldn't look like a hugely daunting process, because there are a whole range of, I mean, we've spoken just about a categorization of ADR users, but our survey went on to look at what types of processes were used, about ADR training within legal departments, about how you generate metrics, if at all, and a whole bunch of other areas, all of which are covered in the ADR toolkit. And the objective was that in-house counsel ought to be able to dip in and out of the toolkit and say, look, I can make some manageable incremental changes to the way I do things, which ought to have a material effect on the way in which we handle our portfolio of disputes.
And you are applying for the, I hope you put your application in for the next, the 2008 CPR Award for Law Firm Excellence in ADR.
We were inspired to give it another go, so we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Great. Well, good luck, and thanks so much for this very interesting review of the study.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.